Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to this podcast. Yet again, we are back, the Sports Performance Training Podcast with myself, Stuart Marshall, and my excellent colleague,
Aidan Toomey. How are we doing? How are we doing, Stu?
I am good. Now, as people can immediately tell, we are yet again in Chronicles of the Vehicles. So we are trying to manage and make sure that we get a bit more regular. So unfortunately, I am an idiot, as always. I forgot my microphone, so I am in my car. So if I sound ridiculous again, same situation last week. Hopefully all should be good. This time, however, Aidan is inside in the lovely warmth of his home. But he's not using a normal microphone, so he's in his living room, so we might get a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's all right. I've got the fire on. You know, it's nice and toasty in here. It's just a little bit echoey.
I'm lucky that where my car's parked, I'm directly in the sun. But the problem is I've got my jacket on. So halfway through this, I might get really, really hot and have to take it off. But it's one of those stupid rustling jackets. So I've either got to take it now, early, or just suck it up. I don't know what to do. I'm confused.
Suck it up. Let the heat get in. Growth hormone. All of that stuff.
I'm not sure I could do it. Hold on a second. Okay, I've got to take it off, people. I've got to take it off. Don't imagine me getting naked.
To be fair, I can't actually hear the jacket. That's...
Oh, did it go? Okay, fair enough. Okay, I shouldn't have said a damn thing. Okay, so...
And that's how unscripted we are, guys.
Yeah, but exactly. And you know what? I remember when Top Gear, which is the car show in the UK, I'm sure everyone's aware of Top Gear, managed to get an award. I think it's like a BAFTA or something like that for being the best unscripted TV show on television, obviously. But that thing is well scripted. Like,
it's not
scripted. And it's like, come on now, people. How can you get away with that? We're unscripted.
Yeah.
We're not on TV, but you know, we're too stupid to do scripts.
True. And I would just like to say, Stu, I've had lots of feedback especially from last week's episode on how quick your brain was actually able to work and figure things out and come up with actually, as some of them said, better training plan than their coaches or their S&C coaches can do with three months spare to actually sit down and plan it.
If they had said how fast I talk, then I could probably accept that. as a northerner, I just chat. But that being said, oh, thank you very much. That's great news to hear. I'm going to throw it back a little bit this week. So we're not going to talk about anything to do with GPP or anything like that. We're actually going to talk a little bit more about sports performance. Heaven forbid. Mm-hmm. Heaven forbid we do that. But we have got a few things just to quickly tick off the list. I feel is very, very prevalent because we have discussed about it before. And it obviously released yesterday, which was the news of NASA.
Oh, God.
And the whereabouts failures that have been quashed, due to absolutely ridiculous technical errors on behalf of the AIU, which we've said this before in regards to that. Someone, please overhaul that damn place, because their procedures, their policies, their practice is not good enough. Absolutely not good enough. It's not stringent enough, right? So as everyone might be aware now, there's been a filing error in regards to some actions taken in regards to one of the testers or whatever. And basically that meant that there's been a back date of that and so on, so on, so on. Right. If that was the case, there was a fine error at the time. It wasn't clear at the time that things were followed correctly. That should never have been put down.
Exactly.
The internal compliance should have already shut that test down of not counting, right? The fact that you wait a year and a bit later for them to go through the review and say, oh, that didn't count, is appalling. is absolutely appalling.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
If someone in my business did that, they'd be sacked. Okay? Yeah. I would audit that out and you'd be just absolutely ridiculous. Okay? It's unacceptable. Unacceptable. Okay? And then there's just the whole scenario of this whole stupid being able to backdate a test to the beginning of the quarter. I mean,
this is
forever known as the Coleman rule in my eyes.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Since he's just got away with it because of that, everyone can do that now.
Well, that's it. You've set a precedent, right? So the thing is now, they're going to have to change they need to overhaul, this is what I'm saying, of their policy, their standards, their procedures, the whole lot. Because, first of all, as we said previously, that shouldn't even exist. No. It shouldn't even exist. No, the fact that they got through their initial round of review in the first place before they even went live with that process is crazy. The fact that it hasn't been looked at since, or it may have been looked at since, who am I? I don't know. But it should have been amended. You know, you can amend this stuff relatively quickly as long as you got the buy-in of the stakeholders, which, by the way, I can't imagine a single stakeholder that would say, that's a great idea.
So,
NASA is now available, or pending, an appeal by WADA.
They've got 30 days, haven't they?
Yeah, I assume they will do, but they've got to look at their processes, first of all. Because one of the issue with regards to the tester being at the wrong place or whatever, or you know, is the fact that regardless of the fact that the tester was knocking on the wrong door, which apparently is one of the issues, right? The tester was sent to the wrong place anyway.
Exactly. This is what annoys me the most about it, Stu, is it's a simple app.
Yeah.
It's a simple system, but her phone number isn't on the system. And she said that she struggled to do that and her boyfriend struggled to do that. Well, if you're really struggling, someone should have dealt that for you. You should have been able to contact someone, a helpline, whatever it is, and they can sort that out. Then she says, I did that, but my agent has been doing my whereabouts for me because I'm unable to do it. Sorry? Texting your agent to tell him where you are, but he doesn't know where you are. He's just going off your word.
Yep.
And then that don't make sense. I know athletes that are in America, that are in South Africa, and their agent's in London.
Yeah. If you switch that rule around, let's look at the other rules, right? If I were to give one of my athletes a supplement, right? But I don't tell you what it is, right? And you take it and you get caught for drugs. Whose fault is it? Yours, the athlete, right? Because you have to check that's right. So how is this? And the thing is, well, I remember someone put, I'm not going to mention the athlete's name, that's not really fair. But the athlete posted yesterday a little snippet of the rules, and the rules are very, very clear, very, very similar. You are responsible for your whereabouts, input. Doesn't matter who does it on your behalf, you, as the athlete, are responsible. And as we discussed before, this is your damn job. This is your job. This is your career. You know, it's just, it's crazy. And then, of course, we've got the whole thing about how long it's taken to come to fruition. Again, I've got no issue with an athlete competing whilst they're in appeal. That's absolutely correct. No issue with that. However, as we've stated before, an appeal or whatever process should never be that long. Honestly, the Athletes Integrity Unit need to hire me, please. Yeah. I will be your guy, and I will absolutely overhaul your process. Because it's just ridiculous. I think they just don't care. These are the guys who are absolutely responsible for this whole process of making the sport look clean, and they're a joke.
I know this sounds bad, Stu, but I have a feeling that the guys that are in control of their risk and compliance actually don't know anything about risk and compliance. It's like they were kind of part of the testing team and they've gone, we need to create this app and we need to create these protocols. Hey, guys, this is your project.
Well, this is the thing.
Right, okay.
Just because you did something doesn't mean you can therefore manage it, if that makes sense. Same thing where, like, with football players becoming managers, just because you're a footballer, you were successful, doesn't mean you'll be a good manager. Same kind of principle in everything, really, isn't it? Just because you've done something to a certain level doesn't mean you can actually then manage or coach.
Exactly.
We will have, by the way.
Did Glenn Mills, did he run 9.5? No. I don't think he could even run 14.5.
Yeah.
he coached Bolt at 9.5.
that brings to mind a discussion, and I'm not going to mention the 400 meter runner, but it'll be very, very clear who the 400 meter runner is, where the guy said he's leaving his current coach because he's never coached someone to 42. Yeah. So who are you going to be coached by? Because guess what? No one's running anyone to 42. It's like the dumbest comment you could ever make. You can't coach anyone to 42. Well, no one's run 42. So how do you work that out?
Exactly.
Anyway, that's not what we're here to bring up because it's great news. It's another issue yet again that's just made the sport look stupid. Now, I get, it just makes us look stupid. And then, obviously, we talk about attitudes of athletes who are, involved and stuff like that. But, yes. So, what I wanted to throw at you today, because you threw it at me last week, right?
Yeah.
I know that we briefly discussed this probably a long time ago. So, therapist hat. You ready?
Yeah, I've put that hat on now.
Okay, make sure it's firmly on, because here we go. Internal rotation of the hip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to just have a brief discussion on issues, rectifications, and its importance on running performance. Now, the reason why I'm asking about this and we're going to have this in discussion is because obviously those of us who are familiar with the world as it is, of sport and all this kind of stuff, we see a recent paper that's come out of Loughborough University, which, by the way, is not rocket science. sprinters with a bigger bum, tend to be faster, right?
Yeah. So
obviously, what this is explaining, to kind of go in, is basically that hip extension, and more importantly, hip extension activated via the glutes and controlled by the glutes, results in faster sprinting. Okay, so it works both, I guess, actually. But
give my little rant on this paper?
I'm not finished, Aiden. and the reason why I just wanted to go into this is because with the role of the glutes being so prevalent, okay, they're through extension is quite a requirement of the internal rotation of the hip, right? Mm. So in order to then do a proper extension through the gait cycle. So now I finished, Aiden. But obviously, we see it all the time in regards to compensatory patterns that happen when that can't happen. So I just wanted to come back to yourself. Now, my understanding of this is very, very limited to some degree. I'm not in your realm, as it were. But so, for instance, when we talk about hip internal rotation, for me, because the foot is on the floor, the leg is, connected, the hip itself, although we talk about internal rotation, has actually a slight bit of external rotation around that femoral head, if that makes sense, in order to create that space for the leg to kind of internally rotate as it goes through the cycle. So I want to talk to yourself about what you see in regards to injuries, how you manage that, and of course, how we can rectify that to optimally get our nice big butts.
Okay. Number one, can I just rant about this paper?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So right now I'm putting my researcher cap on. Okay. So the problem with this research is the genetics of who you are testing against. Okay, there is a genetic factor of people who have bigger glutes. So why, if you go, okay, and this is going to be very stereotypical, Nigerian born people of Igbo tribe, if you know what Igbos are from Nigeria, you'll know they predominantly have bigger muscles, especially in the glutes. Okay, now not every person from that area is going to be able to run sub 10. Yeah. So, but they're all going to have big glutes. That doesn't mean that they're going to be able to run fast. How many of us do we know people who've got huge glutes but can't run fast?
Yeah, boy. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? We know people who've got huge glutes that can't run fast. We know people who don't have huge glutes and run fast.
Yeah.
It's not the size, it's the EMG, it's the muscle contraction of the glute that create, it's what force can be created from that, that makes it from
fast. I think for me, that is exactly one of the crucial points there. So obviously I'm talking about the fact of activation when I talk about extension. Mm-hmm. So using the Gluss method. Mass is not a predeterminant of functionality and power.
Yeah.
Let's just be clear about that.
Yeah, 100%. Yes. But don't get me wrong. You get a distance runner start doing sprints. You get a swimmer start doing sprints. You get a person who's never done sprints before, get them to do a sprint program, and you get them doing resisted accelerations. Oh, guess what? They've got big, some of their glutes start growing. Yeah, because they're constantly being trained every day that they sprint. Yeah, they're going to have growth development in the glutes. I get it. But you don't need to have big glutes to run fast. That was my issue with this paper, was you could pick someone who don't really have big glutes. You know, let's go Usain Bolt. He has glutes. Don't get me wrong. There are glutes there. Are they as big as Tyson Gay's? No. Are Johan Blake's as big as Tyson Gay's? No. You know what I mean? That's a genetic thing. But yeah, he does have glutes. But I've stood next to Bolt. I know my glutes are bigger than his. So, but can I run 9.5? No. You know, it doesn't work like that. And that was my irritation with this paper was, yes, it is an obvious thing that we didn't really need to know that. If you have glutes, the bigger, the faster the sprinter, generally they've got big glutes and they've got big hip flexors. Yeah, because that's what the sport needs and that's what it's dominated by. Is it necessary that they have to be bigger than average persons? No. You know, it's not a thing. It's actually more about their force output that is more prevalent to making a faster sprinter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take that further then and go to that internal rotation that I'm talking about. So yes. In order for the glutes to contract and control the hip and so on and so on and so on, then they need to go through an optimal range of motion in order to get the activation. Yeah?
Yes. Yes.
So being able to actually go through a proper extension, which in this case we're discussing, obviously there's other elements that can be included in this and we can go to other things. But there has to be, the ability to go through that range of motion. The glutes will activate in early stance, as we know, and we'll go through to mid stance, as we're probably aware. At mid stance, there's going to be other things happening, such as the glute med contraction in order to help with the hip alignment, so we don't get kind of like a Trachtenberg issue where the opposite side is dropping, which again can cause issues in regards to hip internal and external rotation on the stance leg. But from kind of mid stance through to extension, when we're going to get that last little tweaks of strength and power, okay, we're not trying to force the stride through to the rear, but we do want it to be nice and as linear as possible in order to get that one. That's what we're looking at, right?
Okay, so for me, from what I see, when I see, okay, so do you want me to go through what I see a predisposer to injury of lack of internal rotation?
Yeah, okay.
So there's certain things that I see. When I see an athlete who can't internally rotate their leg, okay, I already know we're going to have adductor issues. Why do I know that? Well, it's two things. The reason why I know that is, one, when they're bringing their leg through as they go to accelerate, so standing position, no issues, right? But you can already see that they've externally rotated their legs, okay? So they drive off, and to bring that leg through, they're now, instead of using their, so I'm going to use big names, adductor longus and adductor brevis, okay? Now, they are used for internal rotation and adduction, okay? Adduction, mm-hmm. Okay? Now, when you've externally rotated the leg, okay, adductor longus and adductor brevis, guess what they become? They become a flexor of the hip.
Yeah, so just to be clear, adduction, just in case anyone doesn't know where that, adduction is basically bringing the body towards the center line. So
bringing the leg back to the midline, yeah.
So when the hip's rotated slightly, is turned slightly out, we're kind of shifting the muscles that would be normally on the inside of the leg used for adduction in order to help bring the leg through to the front.
Exactly. So you're forcing a muscle to be used in a position that, one, it doesn't like, and two, its line of force and line of strength is not there. but it will do the job because you're compensating for another reason. Okay. Whether that's a hip impingement issue, whether that's just you naturally have been, you're trying to accelerate in that way. You're trying to land on the inside edge of your foot. So you're turning your legs out instead of actually aiming it. We won't get into too much on that inside outside edge, but there's a bit of that. Okay.
Yeah.
But basically that's the first thing I see. And I already see, okay, right. Boom. We're going to get in it. We're going to get groin issues. We're going to get adductor issues. We're going to get neurological issues because guess what? You're using your external rotators. Yeah. I won't go through the list. Or do you want me to go through the list of external rotators?
No, we don't need to go too deep, man. Too deep. Cool.
So basically everyone knows the sciatic nerve. Your sciatic nerve passes through one of the big external rotators. Everyone calls it piriformis, but guess what? I can either go behind it or below it or above it. Okay. And guess what? There's loads of external rotator muscles that sit around piriformis that can compress the nerve as well. So if you're externally rotating the leg, boom, you're compressing the sciatic nerve there. Okay. Then you're putting stress on that and you're putting stress on your lower back because you're externally rotating the leg and then flexing it. So the nerve is being lengthened and pinched at the same time, and nerves hate that. Okay. So I know, right, we've got an adductor issue. We're going to get groin issues. We're going to get nerve issues. The next issue we're going to have is medial knee pain. Reason why we're going to get medial knee pain is because of the way your foot is landing. The foot is going to, because the hip is externally rotated, the foot is externally rotated also, which means when you land, guess what? We're going to go into pronation. Yeah. Or, pronation. We're going to go into pronation, and basically the medial malleolus, so your ankle bone, this is what I look at. You look like you're going into pronation, so everyone will call it pronation. But what actually happens is your medial ankle bone, your medial malleolus, will drop low. So it will drop in towards the ground. What that causes is a shearing effect at the knee joint. Okay, so it opens up the inside part of your knee, which stresses your medial collateral ligament, your ACL, and then adductor longus, semitendinosus, and gracilis. And if anyone's worked out those three muscles, they form the goose's foot, which attaches to the inside of your tibia, which is an inside of the knee stabilizer. It's a very clever mechanism that your body's created.
Yeah,
these are the things that I'm going to see.
Yeah, so for me, exactly what we're just referring to there, of course, is the ability for the foot to actually kind of pivot around its ball socket, as it were. It can compensate by doing what you just said, and so can the hips slide back and externally rotate. However, the knee is, if it's slightly turned out, the hinge of the knee, because the knee isn't a ball socket, it can only want to go one way. So in order for it to be able to still go forward but be turned, it then has to cause strain on the internal side of that of the knee, which is what you're describing then, and that's where you can get a lot more injuries around the knee, and in some cases even patella pain because of the fact of the shearing forces that are being caused around the...
Exactly. And then the big issue with medial knee pain, Stu, is if you're stressing the medial collateral ligament, guess what? That attaches to your medial meniscus, right? And that's the cushioning of that knee. And that medial meniscus and the medial collateral ligament, they also attach to the knee capsule and the medial bursa of the knee. So you're hitting all these four issues that a lot of physical therapy actually can't, like my hands can't calm that down. I have to deal with other areas first.
Yeah.
And then I have to reteach your body how to move away from that pain, move away from that area. And it's a whole system. So that's when we're not getting internal rotation. And the reason why we're not getting internal rotation is because we can't, one of the big things is, one, the way the foot is landing, we can't get the big toe into extension, and we're not pivoting off the outside of the foot. So the leg can't internally rotate, and then it can't extend. If you can't extend your big toe when you're running, you can't extend your hip. So there's a massive fascial connection from the big toe to your glute max. So when your big toe is extended, the fascial connection, so your plantar fascia tightens up across the back of your calf, across your hamstring, and then into your glutes, and it tells your glute to fire. So then your hip goes into extension.
Yeah, so that's obviously using the big toe, as it were, and activating, in essence, the fascia, which would then be the windlass mechanism, which then causes the tension throughout the system. And of course, if you're externally rotating, and I guess it almost looks like what can be classed as like a cigarette put out, when you put the cigarette onto the floor and you put your foot on the floor.
Yeah.
And so as you're coming through extension, you can't hit internal rotation. So the foot rotates out slightly.
Yeah.
And therefore you're no longer really coming off the big toe in a linear fashion. You're coming off the too much of the inside of the of the big toe, and you're now no longer getting the extension of the big toe, which is therefore creating this tension through the windlass mechanism and therefore through the rest of the fascia. And of course, because we've now not activated that and we're externally rotating the leg, we're not going to get the extension we require through the hip and the activation of the glute muscle.
Exactly. And the final injury that I do really see is, it's a weird one, this. So with that external rotation and stuff, what happens is people then try and force the body to do internal rotation. Yeah. But the body is so used to external rotation that your trunk will stay neutral. It won't rotate with it. So what happens is it stays where it is. And then you actually, what I see is a lot of hip flexor tears.
Yeah.
So this is weird. So say your left leg is flexed. So you're bringing your left knee up. Yeah. And you're pushing off your right foot. Yeah. Your right foot is used to external rotation. Your right hip is used to external rotation. You're now telling it to internally rotate. Okay. Now, when you do that, if you watch golfers, they do it the best. You watch discus throws, they do it the best. Spinning shot putters do it the best. Right. What happens is when they do that internal rotation as they extend, their chest turns into the opposite leg. So for a runner, when their left knee is up, their chest should be slightly pointing towards the left knee so they can get the full use of that internal rotation extension complex through the hip.
Absolutely. Okay.
What I've seen a lot of recently is a lot of people where they put sticks on their back, sticks above their heads when they're doing upright running. Okay. A lot of upright running with this stick above the head and the coach shouting, I don't want to see the stick moving, you know, keep that as stable as possible. Get that trunk stable. Then what you see is a lot of their legs end up externally rotating to compensate because it's used to internally rotating. But then, oh, that pinches, that hurts. So then they start externally rotating their legs, which makes this is where coaches think they're doing the right thing, because all of a sudden they see ground contacts becoming quick. Because they think that's working, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. They're cutting the step short. And then the other thing, the reason why the ground contact becomes shorter in that drill is, well, when you're externally rotated, your glute max has been shortened. So the contraction is shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it can react quicker in a sense. But then you lose all of the power. You lose all of the ability. You lose all of the length. So you get all of that. So that's where I get really frustrated when I see, I don't mind, I like stick drills for acceleration.
Yeah.
You know, that's true.
Yeah.
And we use that for reasons. When I get really frustrated is when I see a lot of upright running over wickets and they're using sticks on their backs. Now, I don't mind it if you're trying to see if their torso is moving correctly.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice visual.
And that's part of the thing with regards to myself, for instance. We dabble every now and again, perhaps, maybe, with sticks on the shoulders going over wickets, but only for a brief moment in time, purely for an activation point. But you're absolutely right there. Sticks during acceleration, because we're not, when you're in a forward lean position, et cetera, the amount of hip extension you're actually getting into is quite minimal, because you obviously you're in. Once you start transitioning upright, then extension becomes more prevalent. And of course, if you're not correctly monitored or drilled in the with nice little air quotes here, in regards to what you just discussed there, which I'll come back to, and then it's crucial, you are going to then start losing that thing. And then you're right, we see people who are mimicking Instagram or, you know, some famous groups or whatever constantly. But I see them doing this, so therefore I'm going to do it. No, you don't quite get the context or the position of the athlete. Just because athlete A is doing something doesn't mean that you have to mimic it. And you're right. Sticks for acceleration can be used for different separate reasons. One, for help in increasing power, increasing position, and being able to find your own balance, as it were. Right. Once it comes to upright running, there is that need, and we do drills specifically for this, where you have to almost fold in on yourself on that frontal or sagittal plane or whatever it is, almost like a transverse action as you twist into yourself. So you're raising one knee, one hip, and you're rotating yourself in. So let's say we do a drill, or everyone does a drill. I guess everyone does it, but do they do it correct? Who knows? Which has been termed as hip lock, as it is. Mm-hmm. But what we will do is there are certain positions that must be hit. And the reason why we do it is one of these reasons, actually, which is internal rotation, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. People who are listed from our group. But so let's say we're going to do this left leg up. So the right leg, our finishing point is on the toe, on the big toe, right? So the leg is going linear, it's facing forward. The left hip is coming up above the right-hand side. The left knee is coming up, but the left knee is slightly coming across to midline, all right? Your right hand is also extended above your head, so we're now stretching the QL. We're now getting that fascial stretch across the whole back and across the legs. But again, you're slightly twisting your right shoulder towards midline. And what that doing, of course, is rotating the hip slightly. So we're now getting a bit more internal rotation of the leg that we're standing on. We're getting that undulation, oscillation of the hip and the shoulders to kind of mimic each other or counteract each other, you know, to control the torsion of the stability as well when we're sprinting.
Exactly.
And we're doing that at repeated slow speeds in order to that when it becomes natural that your hips and your shoulders counter each other in order to create the right amount of rotational ability through your hips and through your thoracic spine.
Mm, exactly. And as I was saying, Stu, sorry, when I see people, coaches especially, when they see, oh, that person is externally rotated, I need to make them internally rotate, and they get this pinching feeling. The reason, like, the way I do it is, and Stu, you know, a group that love this, you know, and they start off with 3D maps. Even when there's not an issue there, they will make sure that this is free. What they're trying, if anyone Googles 3D maps, go look at it. It's a good system. It costs £300 to do an online course, I think. It's quite simple. Basis of it is using your internal rotators when your leg isn't internally rotating. I know it sounds weird, right? So imagine you've got your leg stuck to the foot stuck to the floor, your right leg, and you want to create internal rotation. So what now you have to do is your pelvis has to rotate towards the foot to create that internal rotation.
Yep.
So you're rocking around it. What that is doing is it's reteaching the fascia. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. Okay. It's creating a lubrication of that fascia in that movement pattern. Okay. The next step from that is then going, okay, what muscles do my internal rotation? So, okay, I need to wake up tensor fascia lata. I need to wake up glute minimus. I need to wake up glute med, adductor longus and adductor brevis, but all on this internal rotation. Yeah. But don't just do the hip. That's your hip bit. Okay, right now, what do I need to make sure on the foot? Okay, right. I need to make sure that tib post is awake. So my foot isn't rolling into that pronation position. Yeah. That it's strong enough to hold me up there. And then you look at your hamstrings, you know, can your semimembranosus and semiten hold the tibia in that internal rotation, which is going to force the energy on the outside of your knee up your IT band so you can go into the glute? Because guess what attaches to the IT band, Stu? Oh, tensor fascia lata, and guess what? Glute max, right? Mm-hmm. And if the energy is going up the IT band because it's going on the outside of your knee into the inside of your knee, oh, guess what? Glute max gets to fire properly. And then you all of a sudden you get that full internal rotation with extension, right, from the glute max. Then if your torso twists in towards the opposite knee as well, you get that lovely rotation through the hip, you know, that that oscillatory movement that you see, where it kind of looks like it's, I don't know how you'd call it. Well, it looks like, to me, it looks like, you know, when you see a drummer, Stu, and they're just spinning the sticks in their hand.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. The two ends of it.
Okay.
When it's spinning away from each other. Well, and you kind of get that hip coming over as it's going into internal rotation, the pelvis, as they push through.
It's kind of like inverted figure eights on either side kind of way. So one's one way, the other's going completely opposite the other way. And that's the crucial bit that I think that I just want to almost end our conversation because we're going to run out of time a little bit, is literally around that whole principle, really, is we do need internal rotation in order to optimize the gait cycle through the supination, pronation, whatever, in order to end up correctly on our inside edge, but the inside oblique of the foot, in order to correctly go across the hallux, in order to activate the windlass mechanism and the correct fascia, and therefore go into a correct extension to get this big booty that we've all got from sprinting nicely activated to give it the right amount of power. But not only that, from a linear perspective, but obviously from an injury reduction perspective. So really, what we need to do as coaches is look for, when we're doing drills, when we're doing even things like hip mobility hurdle walkovers, is how are the feet being placed on the floor? How are we getting into position to go over the hurdle? Is there some relevant of internal, external rotation that we're trying to really work through? You know, not everyone can possibly afford the 3D maps course or will want to do that from a time perspective perhaps as well, but it's worthwhile having a little Google, looking at the principles of that, looking at Instagram groups, you know, and things like that. And we'll give the guy a shout out. Let's give Marvin a shout out here.
Marvin, 100%.
From Speedworks.
Marvin Rowe of Speedworks Charity.
Speedworks Charity. Check out his Instagram, because he posts quite a bit of his athletes doing some 3D mapping. But what I will say again is, don't lift and shift. Do not lift and shift just because you see it. Doesn't mean you necessarily understand it. Take some time, review it, get a grasp of what it is they're trying to do. Look at other people who are doing similar stuff. But we're not trying to. You don't want to try and force your athletes or get them to think about the internal rotation when they're running. That's just silly. That's going to completely throw them off. But think about how you can add some little bits of drills, little bit of movement within their warm-up, within their prehab, within whatever it is that they're doing, that will help release that, you know, encapsulation of the hip, in order for them to get that better fluidity of movement going forwards when they're doing the mobility. It's not just about going through a range of motion and going blah, 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 blah. It's actually about, what am I doing? Okay, let's say we're doing just anything, what you're doing. It's going to go, am I just loosening up the external? Am I thinking about the internal? Am I going through a nice range of motion from a linear fashion? Remember what our ethos has always been. If we go back to like episodes 1, 2, 3 or whatever, we say, develop the human, develop the athlete, then develop the specialist. Okay.
Exactly.
So we're looking, and I know that's kind of like cheesy, but right? But you want your athletes to be healthy. So A means minimize chances or likelihood of injury. Okay. Just make them happy. B, make them athletic. To be athletic means full ranges of motion, full activation. So don't just sacrifice an exercise for the sake of doing it, because it might make them faster if in the long run they're going to get injured.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question, Stu? I'm not even sure if I did.
I've not got a clue, mate. I'm just going to go back and listen to the whole thing again to see if we did. Yeah, there are things that you can see, and we've discussed it. You know, external rotation is quite prevalent. Lack of internal rotation, rather. Might cut their stride short and not, you know, so it looks like you go, oh, look at this person. He's got great front side mechanics. Never goes into rear side mechanics. That's not always a good thing. So be attention of why that's happening.
Yeah.
Are they rotated, A, at foot contact? If they're already rotated at foot contact, they might have a few issues. Do they remain in an external rotation throughout mid-stance and into extension? And then are they, can you hear that foot kind of rip into a rounding motion, like I said before, about putting out a cigarette on the floor? You know, it's that kind of thing to look out for. And again, what's their history? What's their injury history? You know, have they got hip problems? Have they got nerve problems? Have they got adductor problems, groin issues? And then try and build back if you're a little bit too late in regards to that mobility and activation. Remember what we just said there for myself and Aidan in regards to really working on the hip ability to undulate and oscillate along with the shoulders, you know, to create the space rather than just having your legs externally rotate and exactly. Work about it. Be mindful of what drills and mobility work you bring in and make sure it has a purpose rather than just wasting 5 minutes of your time.
Exactly. And sorry, Stu, just a shout out. So Marvin, if you want to find him on Instagram, that's MS_training, I think. And then his guru, Stu, who does 3D maps, he's actually now based in Birmingham. He was based in London. He's called 12 Health. 12 Health. Bloody hell, that's hard to say. 12, the number. 12 underscore health. God, that's hard to say. Can you say that?
12 Health.
Yeah, oh. I feel like I was saying it wrong.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Pretty funny, cat. The feet are better than the back of Ben. Okay.
He's the 3D map guru, so just you can go onto his Instagram and see that and stuff. But if you've got any other questions, you can find me on Instagram and message me as well.
Yeah, I'm going to link them into the show notes on the site just as well, because obviously I'll find out 12 help. I will find out his
health. 12 health.
Health. Oh, I've got help. Oh, my days. I can't even get it right.
12th health.
just you keep saying it, he's not going to help the matter.
I'll spell it out.
I think anyone who's listening out, if they're still listening, by the way, I hope you really are. I think you can work out what Aidan is saying. But yeah, you know, as we said before, if you got any questions, give us a shout. We really just want to kind of help there. Internal rotation. Needed for health purposes and performance. So just pay attention to your athlete. Doesn't mean you need to over focus on it, but something to be aware of. Until the next time, I've been Stu.
I've been Aidan.
This has been another great I'm sorry, I'm not. This is why we need a script. No, we never need to script. Never need to script. Anyway. Thanks for listening. Obviously, what comes up now is the end of show, a little reel. But until next time, we will speak to you soon. Thanks, Aidan.
Cheers, Stu. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sports Performance Training Podcast. If you like it, please give us a subscribe and share amongst your friends or anything like that. And of course, give us a positive review. We really appreciate that. And we will see you next time for another edition of the Sports Performance Training Podcast.